Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars. And we have an amazing guest today.
Former world champion boxer, model, actor, producer, lyricist, multi-talented Gary Stretch is joining us to talk about lots of more than ordinary things.
Hello there. Thank you for having me, by the way.
Well, thanks so much for coming. And so I wanted to start off, as almost always do, talk about not depressing things, because so many podcasts are depressing. Oh, the world sucks and we can't do anything about it. So we like to have people like yourself who've been successful in a lot of different fields. And so the first thing I wanted to talk about was your sort of leapfrogging career from boxing to modeling to movies. You know, you went and you won a world championships in boxing. And not like a lot of people pretend you really did. Like, I've seen the video. And then instead of being one of these broken down guys that you meet in a bar that talk about how great they were when they were 20, you know, you go on to model for Calvin Klein. And then you go on to act in movies and produce movies. So how did you successfully make that transition when so many other people did not?
Well, I mean, I think it's just frame of mind. It's like I love learning and I love doing new things. And, you know, and boxing, like everything, it's like yourself as judo. You get to a certain point and you feel like you've achieved what you've achieved. And then you look for new things to do. And I've always wanted to do new things. I grew up in a pretty poor family. So my entertainment was my imagination. Kids had games and this, we had sticks and a football. And so, you know, my entertainment was, you know, using my imagination. So I've always loved stories. I've always loved movies. And I thought, beats getting a real job. So when I told my dad I was going to be an actor, he said, when are you going to get a real job? Because he's a plumber. And so it was something that I kind of fell into. I came to LA when I retired from boxing. I met an old lady by accident. And she was a very famous acting teacher. And my mother and father were divorced when I was young. And I didn't have much of a relationship with my mother. And this woman was kind of a different point of view on life. I was fascinated with her point of view because it was very different to my dad's. And so we grew up like in the male environment. And then all of a sudden this woman was like, it was like a breath of fresh air to hear a woman's point of view. And she was smart. She was strong. She was a powerful woman. And I was just, it was like soup for my soul. And I just said, I remember my dad had bought a house in England and I was just retiring. I was going to go home and not sure what I was going to do. And I said, I'm going to stay out here. And I met this acting teacher. And he's like, when are you going to get a real job? I said, I'm not sure, but I just had to be around this woman because I thought I could learn. And that was my in, was not simply to be an actor, was more to just learn this different point of view on life. And then I fell in love with the profession and I learned a lot from it. And it was like growing up in a very closed emotional environment to being opened up. And it was like, it was more about life than about acting. But it's a beautiful art form. It's very similar to boxing. You put in the hours, you do all the prep, and then the camera's action and it's moment to moment. And the fight game is the same. You do all the prep and you get in and the bell rings and it all goes out the window and it's moment to moment. And so there was similarities. I think to be a good actor, you got to have discipline and you got to do the work. And so it was a perfect transformation for me and it was fun and I loved it. And yeah, I, you know, it's funny when you said, you know, people talk about, you know, misery and this. I always find this, when I look back in my life, the low points or we think at the time are the best times and come out of, you know, we learn so much from that stuff. You know, when we're winning, we don't always learn a lot. But when we lose, we have to evaluate. We have to look and think and reconsider and reflect. And I think that, you know, losing is a very positive part of life if you have a good approach to that. You know, there's a stigma on losing, but, you know, in the big scheme of things, it often makes you a better person, makes you realize the people around you who've been maybe trying to tell you things that you didn't listen to because you didn't have to. It makes you take stock. And so I think there's a lot of good in negative.
See, that's really fascinating to me because I don't think it's that often that you get two people who are the world champion of sport in the same room. And whenever I have that opportunity, I find that there's usually some commonalities, but there are some differences. And I have never accepted losing. I can remember every match I ever lost, and I'm still pissed.
So am I, by the way.
Yes. I bet you are. So I feel like I did learn from those, because my older brother used to say that, you know, you learn from winning or you learn from losing, and learning from winning is a lot more fun. He also used to say, you live and learn, or you don't live long. And what I've...
A wise man doesn't learn from his mistakes. He learns from the mistakes of others.
Yes. Well, I really tried to never, ever, ever lose the same way twice. I remember Bruce Toops, who was the director of development for U.S. Judo. That's how I got to travel around the world. Him and this other gentleman that passed away, Frank Fullerton, sponsored my travel because I couldn't afford it. You know, like you, I didn't come from a well-off family. And one thing Bruce said about me is, after I won the world championships, he went back and looked at every tape he could see, because he wanted to see, why did you win when nobody else did? And he said, I saw matches that you won, a lot of them. And he said, I saw matches that you lost, but I never saw you lose the same way twice. And he was right, because I hated losing so much. And I just never understood those people. I know some who've like won the Olympics and gone to the Olympics and won medals, and it doesn't eat at their soul the same way it does to me.
I fought the best guys in the world as an amateur, and I would win fights. I fought a guy 75-0. He was going, a guy called Boy George Collins. It's the reason I turned professional. He was going for the Guinness Book of Records, World Beaters, 1985. He was 75-0. He had 11 titles. It was the NABC Championships, which is the National Association of Boys Club. Everyone in the world goes into this thing. I entered. By luck or by crook, I met him in the final. It was at the Grosvenor House in London. I knew I was going to beat him. They said the lamb to the slaughter. He was 75-0, 74 knocker. I mean, crazy record. 11 titles, going for his 12th. Had a huge deal signed with Frank Warren, the promoter. I knocked him out in the first round, bad. Not only knocked him out, humiliated him, destroyed him. He caught me with one jab in the fight, not even a jab. I was so angry that he caught me with the jab, because I wanted it to be like, I said to my dad, I'm going to absolutely destroy this man. I saw it from, I'd watched him over the years. I knew I could beat him. I was the only person who knew I could beat him. I went in and did the job on him, of all jobs, but I was pissed off that he hit me with one shot. So I know what it's like to be like yourself. I hate losing. However, at 51, and I look back, and you know, obviously in them days it was different, but I've learned that there's been many lessons in loss, and I'm happy, I'm cool with it, because I lost as a professional one fight. I pretty much retired. I got offered a world title fight, pretty much two weights above mine, short notice, took it, got beat. Really mad because I wasn't ready for the fight. Was ahead on all the cards when I jumped in. And at the time, it was a bad situation. But now, if I would have won the fight, I could have been... I don't know. I just think life's meant... You know, it's a funny thing. It has a funny way of working itself out. And as I look back, if I'm really honest, many times in the losses, it was good for me at the time. It didn't feel like it was then. But right now, I think it was a good thing.
She still thinks it's a terrible thing. I can tell by looking at her face.
Me too.
Well, one thing that you mentioned is kind of knowing when to walk away. You said, you know when you're going to time to move from one area to your life kind of to the next. But I think that sometimes people don't know that. I think sports is full of examples of that. But how did you know that? How did you come to that conclusion that, okay, it's time for me to move on to this next chapter?
For me, it's about what you put in and what you get out. And so you put extraordinary levels in and you get extraordinary levels out. But, you know, you get to a certain point where what you put in is less than what you get out of it. And that's when I knew in my heart that, you know, it's like you've just got to be honest with yourself. And so I was brutally honest with myself. I had no clue what I was going to do, but I knew that my heart wasn't in it anymore. And so I walked away. And I have massive regrets now, because I left the game at 25. I don't even think I was in my prime. I cut my nose off to spite my face. Managers and promoters were making all the money. I was packing every venue and not getting the money. You know, so I didn't get out of it because of boxing. I got out of it because of politics, and I regret not seeing how far I could have gone. But at the same time, whatever reason I was not happy, I wasn't happy in that game, so I got out of it.
I find I just want to interject here. I find that interesting. You were the world boxing champion, right? And you just said, I regret finding it, not finding out how far I had gone. And I think that says something. I kind of want to segue into something else related here. You know, I don't have any I don't have any experience in acting. So you could tell me I'm full of it and I will believe you. But it seems to me from what little I've observed from the fringes that there's a similarity in being very successful in the entertainment industry and very successful in a sport, which is like to be a world champion, you have to have that very bizarre combination of arrogant enough to believe that you can be better than everybody on the planet, which is kind of an insane level of arrogance. But at the same time, to get there, you have to have the humility to believe you can learn from anybody. And from what I've seen in sports, the people who think they know it all, and sometimes they think they know it all when they're, you know, made the high school varsity team or they're the junior national champion, those people almost never make it. And I wonder if you saw that same requirement for mixing arrogance and humility in boxing, number one. And I also wonder if that also translates into being successful in acting.
You know, there's certain elements that make people successful. And I think there's certain genes in people that make people successful. I think you've got... I was always afraid when I fought. You know, I wasn't afraid like a bitch, but I was afraid. Like, I was always fearful. I was never sure of myself. But it gets you up in the morning. I mean, insecurity gets you up in the morning. I used to put on this one piece of music, and it was Bill Conti. It was a piano. Most beautiful, gentle, heartfelt music. It was kind of reaching, searching. It was isolated, but it was hopeful. It was a weird track. A lot of fighters put on rap and all. I'd put on this beautiful music. I'd look up to the sky and I'd say, excuse my friends, fuck it. You want it? I'm talking to my opponent. Oh, you want it? Let's see how far you want to go. You want to take me there? Let's see how far you want to go. How far are you willing, Gary, to take it? And I would resolve it in myself. I would say, they want it, they're going to get it. At that point, I was ready for the fight. It would be a penny would drop, and I'd say, fuck it, I'm doing it, let's do it. And if I'm going to die, I'm going to die. I had that. I don't know if everybody has it. I'm sure you had your point. There's a point where you're in so far, I ain't coming out. And if you want to beat me, you're going to have to kill me. And that is something I had since I was a child. I don't know where it came from. I still have it. If I'm in a room and there's 25 guys and my friend needs help, I don't care if there's 50 guys, I'm in. Now, some people are not in. I have that maybe stupidity, but it's just, my dad always said he has there's a mean streak in him, or this, whatever it is, whether I got it from wherever, I think you have to have that. But was I insecure? Yes. Did I want to learn from everybody? Yes. Did I have the confidence? Strangely, yes. So it's like you say, it's a complicated mixture of being humble enough to search for answers, but knowing enough not to let someone come in and kind of take over the show. So it takes a lot to be a good athlete, I think. And I think that whoever gets there, you know, has something very special, because there's so many trying, and it's like the one percenters. You're a one percenter, Anne-Marie. You know you are. You're less than a one percenter. When I say I won a world championship, you know, in boxing, there's like four or five belts. I never was unified. I had one version of, and who knows if I could have got more, probably, at my weight, but I didn't. So I regret that, but I did okay. I'm cool with what I did.
Well, a friend of mine who's from the South and a really good coach always says, it's all about the want to. And I do think that's the defining factor. When I would be coaching and I'd watch kids, and the ones you could pick out who are going to be really successful, you go to like a training camp where people do 2-3-a-day practices and you are beat to shit by the end of the day. You know, you lay down on the mat and you feel like, if this building catches fire, I'll just have to burn up here. I just have no energy left. And you see the people that get up, and after everybody else has left, they want to run through that drill again because they're not quite sure they have it down. They want to go a few more rounds. The kid who runs to the toughest person in the room, and that person might be pounding them down, but they go over and over and over. Those kids, I remember years ago, I was watching a training camp, and there was this kid that I thought was going to be kind of good, although the adults thought was going to be kind of good. These kids were all in high school. And Rhonda said, no, he's not. And I said, what do you say? You still don't like him? She says, no. Watch. He always goes with the kids that he knows he can beat. And so Justin Flores, you know Justin, right? From San Diego, was there at the time. He was on the world team. And he went with this kid. And the kid was decent. And I called time, you know, and they normally switch, go a different person. And And the kid literally got up and ran, like sprinted away from him. And Justin's like, go, come on, let's go again. And the kid says, we called time. And she said, change partners. And Justin's like, that's okay, let's go again. And he refused and went with somebody else. And I said, I noticed that. And I said to Justin, when we go to visit you in San Diego, how many times does Rod go with you? And at the time, Rod was like 13 or 14. He goes, Anne, what are you doing? It's like a little tick. I can't get her off of me. I'm like, go away. You know, because she was like a little eighth, ninth grader. And I think that's the other thing is people who are going to make it are always looking for the toughest challenge. And I don't know about acting, but I do know like in research, Watson and Crick, the guys who discovered the structure of DNA, one of them is giving advice to young scientists. And he said, never be the smartest person in the room, because that means there's nobody there you can learn from. And it's the same thing. You never want to be the toughest person in the room. And I think the people who don't make it are often the ones that they have to be the big badass so they won't leave that gym and go somewhere there at the bottom.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. You're talking about being the smartest person in the room or finding someone to learn from. But you did go in a way from boxing where you were at the top, you know, one of the smartest people in the room, and then going to acting where you were brand new and at the bottom of the game all of a sudden. And what was that transition like?
Acting for me was a new challenge because it was to be brave enough to show who the hell you are. It's like, you know, people build walls around things that need protecting. I got to a certain point in my career where I think when my mother left, you know, you look back, obviously, I think at the time you don't realize, but maybe a little piece of my heart was taken away. And so, you know, that affects your self-esteem. It affects your thoughts of who you are. You blame yourself, my fault. So I became a very insecure kid. So boxing for me was always trying to prove myself. But I found after X number of fights, no matter how many men I stood above, it didn't heal that little hole in my heart. And I got to a point where I thought, you know, rather than stand above a man, maybe I should pick a few people up and maybe that will make me heal. Acting for me was a new challenge because to show up, be brave enough to let someone really see me, not for being a great fighter, not for being the champ, to see a guy in a room in LA that no one knew and to trust that they would like you just for being you. Because most of my life, people like me, I'd get chicks and this and that. I was a champ. It was easy. Had money, cars, women. I often used to go home and think, do they really like me? Or is it, you know, I'm famous and this and that. You know, to go into an arena where no one knows you and to, for people to appreciate you for just for being you and not to try and just, it was a new experience for me. It was something that I was really excited about because if someone said to me in an acting class, wow, that was amazing. It was genuinely, maybe they thought it was amazing. And maybe they thought I was amazing. And I wasn't the champ. I was nobody. I was just a guy doing a bit of work. And I felt like it was a real validation rather than a validation of a result of a something that was public. And so for me, it was a different arena. And it was exciting. And it still gets exciting. And it still gets nerve-wracking when you're going raw on a stage or you're going, you know, they say the camera doesn't lie. If you don't really do it, you'll get caught. And it's just a different kind of bravery, and both equally as important, I think. But, you know, I got to the stage where I wanted to try something new, and that was the profession that gave me that opportunity.
I'm going to go through some of the amazing people that have donated recent games, starting with Jason, Curtis, Anastasia, Aliana, Linda, Catherine, Kimberly, Brenda, Pamela, Jackie, Sandy, Kristen, Kirsten, Rachel, Elizabeth, Gary, Brett, Michelle, Kelly, Michael, Sean, Alejandra, Alexandra, and Rochelle. Thank you so much for sponsoring Seven Generation Games.
Getting back to Gary.
Yeah, so, you know, we had Pete on, and he talked a little bit about the documentary that you guys had just completed, but we would love to hear a little bit more from you. I know it's a labor love that you guys have been working on for the last 6 years.
Yeah, it's been a war to get it to where it's at. I think the film is a beautiful story, and it surpasses sport. It's about family. One thing that made Ronda very, very special as a fighter was the family. Her mum, who is sitting in front of me, but I would say if she wasn't, has been like this rock, an honest gauge throughout her whole career. And when there's disrupt with people who really know you and really believe in you, I don't care who you are as an athlete, it must put a thing in your head. And I think her mum has been 100% right. And if you watch the movie, I think it shows about, you know, comfort levels and being in a certain space. And when you're in a certain space, a certain stability, you can excel. And if that is disrupted for whatever reason, then things can very quickly fall apart. And but yeah, it's a beautiful film. It shows the rise of a young athlete, and again, coming from one sport into another, and learning all the new things and all of the important people around her. And it's a beautiful film. It shows about a young girl who can break open a path that's never been done before. You know, Dana White, for I don't know how many 20 years, said there'd never be a woman in UFC. Ronda certainly changed his mind and has created a platform for many young girls to see that there's things can be done that people don't believe can be done. And she's been a trailblazer in that. I think the film shows that. And obviously, it's a testament to a late father. And when someone believes in you, it sometimes just takes that one. Ronda had many in her family, of course, but her dad was a very special thing. It's very interesting. Most fighters fight to prove people wrong. She did it to prove him right. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful film, and I'm very proud of it.
One of the things that you were telling us, or I guess showing us, about the film when you got here was the song. And we both, and Anne-Marie, as everyone knows, doesn't give compliments unless she really, really, really means them. But we both thought it was amazing. And can you talk a little bit about how that came about, especially since it's, as you said, the first song you've ever written?
Yes, I did a series of interviews. I did a little bit of training with Ronda, so I got to know her a bit. And then, of course, we sat and talked in the interviews. She had this moment with me that I didn't forget. And I asked her about her dad. I said, do you remember the last thing he said to you? And she said, you know, I don't. And it kind of troubled her. She sat for a moment and she racked her brain. And it kind of haunted me, this little moment. She said, you know, I don't know if it was put your clothes on or goodbye. And she said, I used to run around as a little nudist. And then she took a beat and she looked down and I saw her. And that night I went to bed and I thought, wow, trying to remember a time that really you want to forget, you know, when someone goes away that you love so much. So it was a complex idea. And I woke up the next middle of the night and I wrote a lyric down and I called my friend and the composer of the film, Damon Elliott, wonderful artist. He's Dion Warwick's son. And I said to Damon, I've written this little thing. Do you want to come over? And he came over. We sat at the piano. And within an hour, we had the track. We didn't change a word. It was word for word. He just composed some beautiful music. We went into a studio. We recorded the song. And the movie's called Through My Father's Eyes. The song's called Through My Father's Eyes. And I was very happily surprised when Anne-Marie liked it, because she's a tough critic. So it's a beautiful song, I think.
Well, and we're going to play a clip of that right now.
I see it in his eyes, I see it in his smile, I see it in the air breathing only for a while. When it leaves, I'm free, when it leaves, I'm free. Then I close my eyes and see through my father's eyes. I can finally see all the beautiful things only he saw in me. Am I brave to remember? Safe to forget his goodbye.
All right, let's talk about the business side of making Through My Father's Eyes, or we can talk about the business side of sports, either way. I published a book, Winning on the Ground, and it was not nearly as famous as Maria and Rhonda's book.
I published a book too.
Yes. But what I learned, her book was My Fight, Your Fight. Her book was a lot more famous. But anyway, my point about this is I went in discussions with Black Belt, who published it, and they had a lot of ideas that were very good. And when we were up in their studios doing the photo shoot for it, Rhonda and my friend Gary Butts' daughter, Crystal Butts, they were doing a lot of the moves, and the photographer would say, you know, go here, do this. And they said to me, Rhonda and Crystal, well, why are you listening to them? It's your book. You know, why do we have to keep reshooting this? And I said, I've read that writing is an art, but publishing is a business. And this is the business these people are in. And they obviously knew that, well, somebody reading this is not going to be clear. Like, why is your hand there? I can't see this. But in general, I think whether it's making a film or writing a book, that you might have a certain artistry to it, but then it comes down to the business of what will sell. You know, it's, you may love your sport, but to a lot of the people around you, it's will you bring home medals for the United States? Will you bring, you know, put butts in the seats? And so I think there's a need to avoid confusing business associates with friends. You know, whether I'm looking at sports or writing a book, you know, talking to the editor or working on games, I never think that just because I'm doing business with somebody, we're best buds.
No, it's show business, not show friendship. I mean, we know that, right? But in regard to, let's just say, I'll talk about the film. You know, I made the movie. You know, it was not a vanity project for Rhonda. However, I think that anyone who sees it will fall in love with Rhonda, because I think Rhonda is very misunderstood. I think the film documents who she is, gives you a real insight to what goes into, you know, and how she's achieved what she's achieved. But I kept very honest to the script. She wrote the script as we went along, but meaning it was just a slice of her life. Now, it's not MTV, because I didn't want it to become another MTV video. I think the public are much smarter than we give them credit for. It is what it is, and I've remained true to it. Will that hurt the business of it? I don't know. I don't believe so. I think it will do more business if I stay honest with it. But yeah, there's the business of film, and then there's the art of film, and often the two are very different. But I just think that if you're honest with things and you have somewhat artistic, creativity, you can get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how do you reconcile the two? How do you keep a balance? So at the end of the day, obviously, you have something, no matter what film it is, I know you've worked on a number of them, you know, that you're happy with it, but you also, you know, it is your job. So it's not just like a nonprofit kind of thing you're going out and doing. How do you balance the two?
For me, the subject, Rhonda, in this film, her mother, her teammates, her sister, the qualities were there. I trusted that the people and the players and the life was interesting enough that people are gonna like it. Had I been doing someone else, one of the Kardashians, I'm sure I would have been fucked royally. Forgive my French. But I wasn't. I had a great subject. I had an incredible story. I think people don't want to see MTV. They want to see the reality of the relationships. They want to see what she did to get where she got. This is interesting. They don't see it. It's all MTV. They did the promo for the fight. You know, it was a new house and walking. Everything's cool. But, you know, how many cool videos you want to watch?
And that's not even her house.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'd rather sit and talk to a mum, world champion, no makeup, fucking tell you the way it is. That, for me, is candy for my soul. I don't want to hear all the bullshit. Dana White, she's the... You know, it doesn't matter. What can I learn from it? I think people are starved from the truth. And I think the film is just simple, it's honest, and I trust that it's enough that people are going to want to watch it.
Well, and we've talked about this before, too. Hollywood is a lot of people, when you walk into a room, they're always looking for whoever the most important person in the room is. You know, how do you keep yourself in that kind of environment? Because we've seen lots of people lose themselves among that.
You know, I don't go out. That's the truth.
You just stay out of the room.
I just stay out of it. You know, I have a beautiful girlfriend and I find pleasure in other things. I've been there, done it, been the parties, you know, banged the chicks. I've been around the block. Forgive me, Emery. There's only so many times you can do what you do. It's an empty life. I stay out of it. It is what it is. It's great for them who want to do it. For me, there's people who watch movies in bars while they're having a drink, and there's people who make the movies that they're watching. I'd rather be one of them guys at this point in my life. So I don't believe you win fights in a bar. I don't believe you get movies in a bar. I don't believe, you know, at the end of the day, I've been in the business 25 years. People say, meet me and let's have a dinner. And I say, send me the script. Let me come and audition. If you like me, I'll get it. I don't want to waste my time. I don't have the time. I don't have the money to be 55 dinners a week at $200 a pop, and everyone's throwing you a load of bullshit. And send me a script. If it works, I'll let me audition. If you like me, if I'm somewhat right, then give me a job, because the rest doesn't matter to me. It's, you know, but it's fun. People like it. I'm at a different stage in my life right now.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7generationgames.com. and that's 7 as in the number 7, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.